Welcome again to Dr. Ray Talks It Over, the program designed for parents and families where the aim is to help you stand strong as a parent for the sake of your children. I'm Jerry Usher, and today we're going to talk about specifically that, standing strong, raising citizens for the kingdom of heaven. And as always, Dr. Ray is with us, Dr. Ray Guarendi, father of 10, psychologist and author. Dr. Ray, it's a pleasure to be with you again.
Thank you, Jerry.
You know, I've heard you often talk about something that you call the guiding principle behind parenting. I'd be curious to know a little bit more about what that is.
I will ask parents, how do you know what decisions you're going to make regarding strictness, supervision, moral education, discipline? How do you know? And most of them will say, well, I want to raise a moral child, or I want a child who's happy. I get a little frustrated with that one, but a lot of folks say that. Or they will say, well, I want a child who's responsible. I ask them, what do you want to look at age 22? What do you want staring back at you? Because the answer to that question will really determine much of how you parent. Tragically, many parents are accepting saying something like this. Well, you know, he's not a bad kid. I've been giving you the wrong impression, Dr. Ray. I know I've emphasized some problems, but he's really not a bad kid. He's a pretty good kid. I said, what do you mean by that? Well, he's not on drugs. See, I tell parents, if you want to be able to say, gee, he's not on drugs, or gee, I should be grateful, it could have been a lot worse, he could have lost 4 jobs, or don't all adolescents go through some problems with the law, well, then your bar's not very high, and you're basically saying at age 22, I just want somebody who's not real pathological.
It's a relativistic approach.
Yes. Now, if you want to say something like this, I'm not real objective because I am the boy's mother, but I believe that child there is 1 in 1,000. Morals, character, he's a beautiful human being. I tell parents, if you want to say that, then you're going to have to be a 1 in 1,000 parent. You cannot compare yourself to the majority anymore. Your goal is too high. You want to raise a godly human being. You want to raise a saint. So therefore, you can't look all around you and go, well, you know, by comparison, I'm doing pretty good. Because that will mislead you terribly, because it will not get you to the goal. The guiding force is, what do you want to look at? What do you want to be able to say when that child's a young adult? And that will color much of the kind of decisions you make on the way there.
But a parent can't just will that to happen. They can't just wish when their kids are young, boy, I hope that my kids turn out to be the way that I want them to be. It has to be an efficacious willingness on their part.
Big word.
And they have to put an effort at this, don't they?
The will, the mind, the heart, and the soul. You pour it into getting to that point. You're absolutely right, Jerry. We can't stand by and go, well, I pray to God that it works out. No, I'm going to pray to God, and then I'm going to get my hands in there, roll up my sleeves, and tackle it. And this is a show we're going to talk about today, I am going to be a very strong parent in my decisions, and in my supervision, and in my guidance, and in my structure.
What do parents have to stand strong against? It seems like families are being bombarded these days with things that parents may not want their kids to be influenced by. What are some of those things?
The culture is no longer on parents' side. Looking back in our country, many of us say things like, you know, well, there was a time when parents and the overall society at large were heading in the same direction. I think that was probably so. But what definitely seems to be so is that it's not that way anymore. The culture at large is very amoral. And when I say the culture at large, I mean that which dominates our day-to-day existence. The media, the music, the movies, the computers, the mindset of our laws, our ideas, our overall attitude of what we are to be is definitely at odds with what Christian parents want to teach their children. Probably the most obvious, and you and I could talk for days about this one, is the media. The media essentially shapes and molds us in ways that we have no idea it happens so subtly. It teaches children, for example, what to want, what to be discontent about. It inures them. It makes them habituate to violence. Many parents will say, yeah, you know, I'm real careful. I don't want my kids to watch violence on TV. I don't want to watch sexual content. And I tell them that's a good place to start. But you must remember that much of what the media portrays is very much against your Christian value system. It portrays immediate gratification. I want what I want, and I want it right now. It portrays what we call tolerance for all beliefs and attitudes. And I don't mean loving tolerance in the Christian sense. I'm talking about everything's equal. It's all the same. Your truth is my truth, and your morals are my morals, and let's just all sing kumbaya around the campfire and get along.
Right.
Yes, and in fact, it's very, very, very subtle stuff. Many parents cave to the influence of the culture. If your child, Jerry, your adolescent child, does not have a TV in his or her room, you are now in the parenting minority. Because I have seen surveys that have said the majority of American adolescents have TVs in their rooms. Probably one of the more devastating findings I came across on the addictiveness of television. And remember, it affects you in subtle ways. When the TV is on, there is no family communication. When you're passively watching that thing, you're engaging in nothing active. So it isn't just what it fills your child's mind with. It's what it does with their time and your family life. They asked 2,000 four-year-olds, would you rather be with Daddy or watch TV? Now, you're not going to be surprised at what the majority said, correct?
Right.
Yeah, they said TV. And what's most interesting about that, it bespeaks of the powerfully, I call it video cocaine, nature of television. Mm-hmm. A four-year-old boy adores Daddy. Daddy is a god in a four-year-old boy's eyes. A four-year-old boy will tolerate just about any kind of conduct from his father because he simply is at that point in his life where he so much wants the time, the affection, the approval of his father.
Wants to be like him.
Yes. Look how strong that box is, that by age four, if it is allowed access to that child, it can change the majority of their priorities.
Mm-hmm.
That's how powerful it is. And so, therefore, parents have to be aware of it, have to be vigilant against it, have to take stands against it. I'll share with you some simple rules we do in our home. Network TV is virtually never watched. It can't be trusted. All right. It is in so many ways antithetical to what we believe as Catholics that we simply don't even allow it access to our children. And even if the show is good, you can't trust the commercials. When we watch Discovery Channel, Animal Planet. You know, my kids just think the greatest thing in the world is wiring in some kind of home alarm system. To them, that's the big excitement of their life. Because they have nothing else to compare it to. The news. We have never watched the local news with our children. My oldest son is 13. He is yet to see the local news. Because it's nothing but man's inhumanity to man, the first eight shows. Why would I allow my kids to be assaulted by this? They're children. I want to protect their innocence. So for me and for my wife, our experience has been vigilance at the media. You can't be vigilant enough.
I think as far as the media go, that basically speaks for itself. What are some other things that parents have to stand strong against? You know, one thing I know that you've mentioned before, I've heard you talk about, is other parents. That may sound odd to some people. How do parents have to stand strong against other parents?
As more and more parents are not together on their goals, for example, as we become a more diverse nation in our attitudes and our beliefs and our spirituality, that means that if you as a parent are attempting to raise a godly child, many other parents don't have those same goals. They may mouth those goals, but if they're not taking it serious, in essence, they're not doing it. So your child pretty much is going to associate with a wide range of children. I will tell parents when they ask me, should we pick our children's friends? I said, I think you better, especially the younger ones, because a worldly child can bring to your child all of the things that you think you've screened out by keeping the television off, by not letting them have access to the internet, by not letting them play computer games, by not letting them have certain CDs. But if you put them in with a worldly child, especially at young ages, without supervision, that veneer of innocence can just get scraped away. Now, obviously, the comeback to that is, oh, please. They gotta live in this world. They gotta associate with people. And that's very true. What I'm saying, Jerry, is that we don't just simply throw open the doors, give them unlimited access to certain situations or kids. A rule in our home. You don't go to anybody's house that we don't absolutely know the parents. Not a phone call. Hi, how are you? I'm Ray Garendi. How are you? My son's going to come over to your house because he wants to play with your son, Oxford. No. We have to know you almost like we know ourselves. Because I can't trust what you'll put on that television. I can't know what your 14-year-old older son is going to say or do with my child. I can't know these things. And I can no longer assume that it's a safe environment. So you protect. The key word is protect. You fight against other parents this way, too. Many parents will now tell me, you know, I feel like I'm a weirdo. I feel like I'm an oddball within my own family, sometimes within my own faith community, because people look at us and go, oh, please. You gotta let them be, for heaven's sake, everybody I know has seen Jurassic Park. Everybody I know has seen Titanic. Come on, you can't protect them forever. And these voices are coming from their mom, or their Aunt Mabel, or people within the parish that they respect. And they're thinking, are we this out of touch? And the kids, of course, ever vigilant to take that to their advantage,
right,
have the attitude of, how can all those people be wrong and you be right, Mom? We're the only one who doesn't have that. Now, many parents will say to me, well, you know, Ray, I'm pretty strict that way. I mean, I don't care if there's no other parents out there that don't let them have that video game. I'm not going to let them have that video game. And for the most part, we recognize the blatant examples. It's the subtle ones that cumulatively take their toll. Example, somebody will walk in my office and they'll say to me, you know, my child asks for a lot of things. He asks for a lot of material goodies. He asks for privileges. He asks for freedom. And 95% of the time, I feel like I say no, because the things he's asking for are not good for him, not at this age. But I'm starting to worry, because I'm already much, much, much more strict than all the parents around me. And I'm afraid that if I make my child an oddball, a weirdo, they're going to get resentful and rebellious. And they will run. They will run from me. They will run from the church. They will run from God. They will just, like a rubber band, snap. And as fast as they can go in the opposite direction, they'll go. It's what I call the illusion of strictness. Here's how it works. If I, as a parent, want to raise a godly, moral child, that's my number one goal. That will make my parenting complete. Then if I look around me and I say, you know, I'm pretty much the most strict parent I know already, so maybe I should find ways to lighten up a little bit and allow them to do certain things, or allow them to have certain material goodies that I normally wouldn't want them to have, but maybe I'll compromise on that. Because already I'm parenting at a much stricter level than 98% of the parents. That's what I call the illusion of strictness, Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
You compare yourself to other parents and you look very strict. But in fact, you're right on target to get to your goal. You see, you want to raise a godly child, so you're doing what you need to do. But as you look around you, you're saying, maybe I'm too strict. You haven't moved. Everybody else has moved. And that's why I say, looking at other parents, you sometimes have to fight them because criticism of your parenthood will come from quarters that you sometimes least expect. Let me give you a small example. My wife and I have a rule that if you've created a problem or you've acted up, you carried on, you could, if we're heading out to eat or going to a restaurant, you could not get to eat out. You might have to sit and you'll eat a sandwich before we go, and you don't get to eat out. Eating out's a privilege. Normally, we meet my mom and dad for breakfast. My dad has a hard time handling that. If he sees one of those little kids sitting there reading a book and not getting to order eggs and toast and bacon, he's, Ray, come on. Ray, you can't, don't, Ray, just let him eat. So why don't you discipline him some other way? Ray, don't do that. And I want to look at this man and go, is this the same guy who raised me? You know, like Bill Cosby said, no, this is an old person now trying to get into heaven. You know, this is my dad who was very strict, and now he's looking, going, how can you do that? Or if you're at a party, let's say you're at a party, and all the other kids are running and carrying on, and you go, excuse me, Igor, go sit on the steps, please. And everybody looks at you. Well, he wasn't the only one running. The other children were running too. Yes, I know, but I asked him to stop, and he ignored me, so he has to sit out. Well, children run, you know. I mean, children run, and then he was doing what the other boys were doing. Yes, I know that. But I asked him to stop, and he ignored me, so he's out of the activity. You know, there are 12 other parents here. You are the only one who is making your child be punished for running. I'm not punishing my child for running. You see, you are forced into a situation to battle other parents to do the things which are good for your child, and in the long run, which will have people say, you know, you got a great kid there. And my wife always says, you know, if somebody says to me someday down the road, Randy, you got great kids, she goes, I'm going to have to fight the temptation to turn and look at them and go, now which is it? Was I too strict all these years, or do I have great kids? It can't be both.
You know, what comes to mind immediately is the need for parents to probably get some good guidance, perhaps outside of themselves. And what I'm thinking about here is maybe some spiritual guidance, or to be rooted in prayer and discernment about what they need to do, because it seems the temptation would be to maybe chuck some of this, as you said, the illusion of strictness, chuck some of the discipline because of all this bombardment of people that you're talking about saying, how can you discipline your children in this way and so forth? Seems like they'd feel like they're alone on an island. They would have to have some support, some inspiration somewhere to know that what they're doing is right.
When our Lord sent out the 70, did he say, okay, guys, come here. Now there's 70 of you. Was it 72?
Well, I think ultimately it was 72.
72. All right. And he said, look, I think we can cover more ground if you all split up. I want you to go out one at a time. Is that what he said?
No.
No, he sent them in twos, didn't he?
Exactly.
Because there it is, the psychology of God. He knew somebody, one person with you would make all the difference in the world. I advise parents, find other like-minded parents, even if it's just one, that you can lean against, pray with, talk with, get guidance from, spiritual mentoring from, common sense from, and say, I'm not the only one crazy, am I? You're crazy too? Good. I don't feel quite so crazy if I know you're crazy too. That is critical. Even a little parent support group. That's why homeschoolers are so strong, because they're viewed as kind of fringy by the culture at large still. But yet they have very powerful support groups because they know they need that. Because their parenting is in many respects much more, I'd say, intense than maybe the culture at large.
What about the issue of parents who may fear losing their child's affection when they discipline?
That's a good one. One of the great cliches hammered into parents' psyches is, you know, if you are too strict, if you do attempt to make your child not experience life at the level that most of his peers get to experience it, your child's going to resent you. Your child's going to be angry at you. Your child's not going to be able to relate to you. Your child's not going to like you. Your child's going to feel frustrated. Your child is simply going to comply out of a grit teeth, have to go along because you're the boss, and one of these days, forget it, their true feelings will come out, and it will blow up in your face. Cliche number 105. The idea that if a parent sets standards and makes loving judgments and says, I can't let you do those things. Those things are not good for you at this point in your life. You don't have the wisdom, the maturity to deal with those things. That if you do something like that, especially if you do it a lot, and in today's world you have to do it a lot, there's no way around it, that you're going to breed a resentful child. Nothing could be further from the truth. I always tell parents, if your child goes wrong, if your child makes a bad move, make it be because they had to scratch and claw their way over top of you, not because you stepped aside and said, here.
Held the door for them.
Be my guest. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's say, Jerry, that as a parent you've decided, we will discuss independent dating, child, when you are 16. Now, I'm going to discuss independent dating with my children when I'm dead. I told my kids, you want to date, you get married first. Now, back in the old days, the early 80s, you got grief from your kids. What is different now is you can expect grief from your peers. These are different times. This is not when you and I were growing up. These kids grow up so much faster nowadays. You can't protect them forever. That's a real world out there. They got to deal with life. You can't wrap some emotional, moral bubble around them. They're going to get resentful. I had a friend whose cousin's brother lived out in California, who knew this neighbor's best friend's sister's cousin's brother's employee's brother's sister-in-law's brother's cousin. They didn't let their son date till he was 16, and he ran like a wild dog when he got to college. Yes, that's the exception. Jerry, let me share with you an interesting rule. There was a survey done not so long ago that says, if a child has a first date between the ages of 11 and 13, 90% chance of being sexually active senior year. First date 14, 50%. First date 16, 20%. Parents, what odds do you want to play?
It just shows that common sense and paying attention to things like that can certainly help save parents a lot of grief and not buckling to the peer pressure that's out there. In our final couple of minutes here this time around, Dr. Ray, I'd like to focus on some practical advice for parents. Let's close with some thoughts on what parents can do. Where does a parent start if they've been listening to the program today and they realize, hey, you know, I've been a little lazy in my parenting over the years, and they say, hey, it's time to start to turn this around. Is I don't imagine it's something you do overnight, but where do parents start?
Everything that impacts your child, whether it's a computer, whether it's music, whether it's television, whether it's other friends, whether it's social activities, whether it's sleepovers, whatever it is, you ask one question. Will this help or hurt my ultimate goal to raise a citizen for the kingdom of heaven? If in the slightest way it hurts, even the slightest, then go, it's not necessary. It doesn't need to be a part of my child's life. Secondly, you have to know what your children are doing as they get older pretty much at all times. The why, when, where, what, who, and how of their activities. Given that most children are getting too much freedom too early, your child will be an oddball because you will let the rope out by the inch instead of by the yard. Therefore, know and supervise. Far less children get in trouble because their parents know where they are all times and because their parents don't know where they are. That is not a lack of trust. That's a love action. Thirdly, give material goodies by the penny, not by the dollar. Give it ever so slow. You want to raise a grateful child? There's a simple rule of life. Give them less. They will appreciate it more. We could go on forever about this, but I just wanted to throw out just a few generic principles. We'll get more detailed as we move on.
I know that you have written a book titled You're a Better Parent Than You Think. In a nutshell, I think that's a good message for parents. They can change if they want to and realize that they have to in order to help their children.
How was it that your mom, your dad, my mom, my dad, never had access to the experts? And yet, at least according to your and my opinion, they did a pretty good job, you know. I don't know about you, but I told my mom, I say, hey, Mom, you did just fine. I'm not one of these ones that's going to go on TV and trash my mom and dad. That's a direct reflection on me. Why would I do that?
Well, next time we want to talk about normal childhood. What is normal when we're speaking of children and so forth? And get your thoughts on that. Dr. Ray Guarendi here on Dr. Ray Talks It Over. Thanks for being with us. How can people get more information and get in touch with you?
Website, www.kidbrat, one word, kidbrat.com. And also, through Catholic Answers, they can call you and get a hold of us. And you can always call my mom. She knows where I am.
Well, that's good. Join us again next time when Dr. Ray talks it over. God bless.